Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 17, 2020. The United Nations mission in South Sudan is predicting instability in parts of the country.
In Warrap, the ongoing revenge cycle is also very worrying. More than 1,000 people died in Warrap in the first 6 months of this year.
And Sudanese authorities appeal to the international community to help refugees crossing from Ethiopia.
Popular effort has been carried out to mobilize local resources through the state government to assist the refugees. There was a big response, but the amount of crisis is huge, which needs a lot of external efforts and requires the international community to take its responsibility.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan is predicting an outbreak of attacks between communities in Upper Nile and Bahr el-Ghazal next year. UNMISS Chief David Shearer says in the past 6 months, more than 1,000 people have been killed in Warrap State during intercommunal clashes. The Secretary General of the defunct Tonj State says armed civilians sometimes overwhelm security forces, adding that disarmament exercise has targeted areas that witnessed several intercommunal clashes. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
UNMISS Chief David Sierra says hundreds of Warrap State residents were killed during intercommunal violence in the past 6 months. Sierra warns that unless authorities take action to prevent further violence, many people could lose their lives.
In Warrap, the ongoing revenge cycle is also very worrying. More than 1,000 people died in Warrap in the first 6 months of this year. So those 1,000 people who died, there's a lot of people who want to go on and carry out revenge attacks for those that have died. So we've got the potential for more conflict in those areas.
During an ongoing investigation on intercommunal violence in Jonglei State, UNMISS discovered that hundreds of people were killed, according to Sierra.
Talking to people about the number of deaths but it's hundreds of people died in the conflict between February and July, and more than 400 people were abducted. So those abducted people and still in the hands of opposing communities sow the seeds for conflict in the future.
Gabriel Awan Makwach, Secretary General of the now defunct Tonj State, admits intercommunal violence is ongoing in parts of Warrap State, especially in Greater Tonj, where he says communities frequently carry out revenge and counter-revenge attacks against each other.
As I talk to you, there are some incidents that are happening. They happen and they are continuing happening because of the guns present in the hands of the civilians, the armed youth. So the state authorities are working hard to ensure that this civil population that possesses the arm illegally are disarmed. They are controlled not only with the neighboring states, but also within the state, especially in Tonj.
Makwacha says many civilians, especially youth, are armed in the Greater Tonj area and sometimes overpower government forces trying to disarm them by force. Makwacha says while disarming area youth and other civilians improves the security situation, a burning question remains.
Our civilians possess the gun. Where do they get the guns? It's something that we can all ask ourselves. Where do they get the gun? Yes, they have the gun. Where do they get them? Where do they get the ammunition? It's a question we can ask ourselves collectively. So they have the gun. They possess the gun. They're told where they get the gun is not known.
Sierra says UNMISS is anticipating more revenge and counter-revenge attacks early next year and is calling on authorities to take appropriate measures such as engaging the warring communities to resolve disputes and prevent more violence before the dry season begins. He says the UN will pre-position peacekeepers in hotspots.
Over the coming weeks, in cooperation with the security services, we will begin deploying peacekeepers to places like Manyabo, the Congolé, Dukpadiet, UI, and Wat to set up temporary bases there or to conduct extended long distance patrols.
Besides revenge and counter-revenge attacks, intercommunal fighting in South Sudan often erupts over cattle ownership, land, pasture, and water points. In August this year, 127 people were killed when civilians clashed with soldiers during a disarmament exercise in Warab State's Tonj town. Some of the casualties were soldiers. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on conflict, residents of Tonj North County in Warab State say there is relative peace in the area after local armed young men handed over their guns to a disarmament team deployed in the area. A member of the Tonj North County Security Committee says his group has collected at least 400 guns between June and October this year. For VOA News, Daniel Marengwek reports from Juba.
Nyang Athian Mapal, a youth from Maul Fayam of Tonj North County, blunderly handed over his gun to a county security committee. Warab State Governor Bona Fanak set up the funeral in August this year. Mapal admits gun have caused more suffering to local communities.
I have fully understood the damages caused to us by guns. I was not able to move from my area to nearby communities because I feared guns. Today we have decided to say it is enough to the devastation we have inflicted on ourselves.
Mapal says he has no plans to buy another gun after witnessing relative peace in the area and says he cannot understand why guns find their way back into civilian hands after several disarmament exercises in the area. He is urging authorities to ensure the guns collected this time are either destroyed or kept away from civilians. Bol Deng, another local youth who blunderly handed over his weapon to the county security committee, says although he and other armed youth gave up their guns, he believes some unnamed government official will supply the relatives with guns again. Deng says he will work with traditional chiefs and the county security team to help identify civilians carrying illegal firearms.
Now people are talking about collecting guns, and in less than a month later, these guns will come back. I was the first person to come out and hand over my gun to my chief before the committee came to the area. I wanted the people to take me as an example and hand over their guns.
Marial Mayar, another youth who surrendered his gun, says he has seen the security situation improve over the first few months after several youth surrendered their guns.
From October up to now, people are moving freely in Warab town without fear because guns were taken. Personally, I have accepted to say no more buying of guns this time.
Mayar is urging state authorities to improve security in the area by protecting the newly disarmed communities. Ayin Agin Kwat, a paramount chief of the Noi community, says he formed a committee of 20 local youth leaders and instructed them to move from village to village and collect guns from armed youth. He says armed young men have helped him collect 223 guns from the Noi community alone. Kwat says he worries that after collecting more than 200 illegal guns from civilian, some rogue security operatives will resell firearms to local youth.
Really, we are tired of guns. As the local chiefs, we feel threatened and insecure when we deal with these armed youth. Several disarmament exercises were done in the past, but guns returned back in less than a month. We are asking the authorities to properly manage these collected guns and not to allow these local youth to rearm themselves.
Gabriela Wanmokwach, Secretary General of the now defunct Ogun State, says although several disarmament exercises are being carried out this year, local youth are still carrying guns in the three Ogun counties.
The exercise has stopped for some time because civilians clashed with the army in August this year. The government is preparing to hold dialogue and peace conferences at the grassroots levels to engage these communities on peaceful coexistence.
Civilians in two counties of Warabi State, Gourial West and Gourial East, were disarmed 2 years ago. Although most civilians in Ogun North County have surrendered their guns, civilians in Ogun East and Ogun South counties have yet to voluntarily hand over their guns to authorities. In this year, President Salva Kiir ordered a nationwide disarmament and formed a committee for Greater Barra-Gazal region, which was tasked with implementing the order. For BOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
As COVID infection reaches record numbers in the United States, the African continent is bracing for a much smaller surge after spending the year defying doomsday predictions that it would be hardest hit. Medical experts, including White House Coronavirus Task Force member Anthony Fauci, who heads the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and Dr. John Ngengason, the director of the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, are meeting at the annual Global Meeting of Tropical Medicine Experts to discuss what the very different continents have learned from the pandemic. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
When Egypt discovered its first coronavirus case in February, African public health officials sprang into action. A week later, experts from the African Union's 55 member states convened at AU headquarters in Addis Ababa to come up with a plan. 9 months later, Africa's top health leader says that coordinated response spared the continent the worst of the pandemic, with 1.9 million recorded cases, fewer than expected for a continent with such low levels of infrastructure and social safety nets. And, says Dr. John Nkengasong, director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, it is proof that this continent is more than capable of battling a pandemic that has overwhelmed other societies.
The key unifying leadership of the continent very early on in February has been a very critical factor in moderating the spread of the virus on the continent. As a matter of fact, if the continent didn't go into a massive shutdown early on in March, with the rates in South Africa, for example, were doubling every 2 days. So I think that would have been a severe pandemic in South Africa.
Nkengasong says the pandemic proves that partnerships matter, and that a cooperative, coordinated approach is necessary to contain the spread of the virus. Dr. Anthony Fauci heads the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in the country hit hardest by the pandemic, the United States. Fauci, speaking to medical experts by video conference late Monday, reiterated the 5 steps everyone must take to avoid the coronavirus. Wear a mask. Keep a 2-meter distance from others. Avoid crowds. Conduct any gatherings outdoors instead of indoors. And regularly wash hands.
If those 5 public health measures were adhered to universally and consistently over the country, it is clear from our previous experience with other nations and even regions in our own country, we would not be having the degree of surging of cases that we are currently seeing.
In some U.S. states, political leaders have embraced those measures. In others, governors have contested the importance of masks or declined to impose restrictions they say would hurt businesses. Fauci said the result is a surge in cases across the U.S.
Around June 19th, we had the beginning of a resurgence of cases due to the attempts to so-called reopen the economy or reopen the country, which was done variably with regard to adhering to the guidelines which came out. Different states did it differently. And we had a resurgence back up to close to 70,000, went back down, stayed around 40,000 for a while, and now is going up to 86,000 with a mean, I say, an average of weekly somewhere around 80,000. Unfortunately, on November the 4th, we hit 100,000 cases in a single day.
According to the Johns Hopkins University, the U.S. currently has more than 11 million confirmed cases and approaching 250,000 deaths. Meanwhile, Nkengasong notes that Africa's leaders are pushing the prevention measures anew as the continent braces for another coronavirus wave that seems to be emerging, concentrated in Algeria, Tunisia, Kenya, and South Africa.
There's a tale, a very worrying tale is beginning to emerge, and we are recording now about 10,000 cases per day. And very clearly showing that if not, something is not done, we will be getting a second peak sooner than later.
He said, if Africans stick together, in spirit, not physically, the continent will show the world it can beat the virus. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at UN's World Diabetes Day.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what puts a smile on your face?
I have a group called Lishi. It's a group full of young children. So when I dance with them, it puts a smile on my face. Makes me happy.
What puts a smile on my face is good food and good people.
Okay, when I see good food and good friends around, well, I smile.
My husband, to me, puts a smile on my face. He cracks jokes. He likes cracking jokes, and that makes me happy.
One thing that puts a smile on my face is to see somebody who's been in trouble or who has had great challenges, and then he has broken through, his life is better, their lives have improved, their marriages, their business. It brings joy to my heart to see people becoming better.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at diabetes. This year's UN World Diabetes Day on November 14 has been observed in Cameroon, with medical staff all over the Central African state encouraging those with the disease to return to the hospital for treatment. Health workers say patients who are scared of COVID-19 stopped going to the hospital for control of their glucose levels. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaounde that although the disease is spreading rapidly due to Cameroon's inactive lifestyles, health workers complain that 80% of the patients do not know they have diabetes.
A medical doctor tells scores of people at the general hospital in Cameroon's capital, Yaounde, to go to the nearest hospital if they get tired and thirsty regularly, drink water and urinate frequently. She says while at any hospital, such people should immediately ask for their blood sugar levels to be measured. Diabetes educator Agnes Koki says the campaign is part of World Diabetes Day activities. She says medical staff members want to encourage people to find out whether they have diabetes.
There were so many people out there without the knowledge of diabetes. We educate them on what diabetes is all about, how to feed, and so many other things. We do free consultation, free screening.
60-year-old carpenter Hilary Lingalia says he was diagnosed with diabetes after his wife forced him to go to the hospital. He says the African traditional healers he counted on for treatment from nerve pain, a diabetes-related condition, instead told him that he had been bewitched.
It was a strange sickness to me because my father did not have diabetes, nor my mother. In 2014, I had this complication on my leg until it was amputated. To face the reality and accept it.
Cameroon's National Diabetes and Hypertension Program reports that the prevalence of diabetes has increased from fewer than 1 million cases in 2010 to over 3 million in 2020. The report says 80% of people living with diabetes are currently undiagnosed. Cameroon also blames sedentary lifestyles for the increase in the disease. Solange Esunge leads an association of diabetic patients in Yaounde. She says many people fear being screened for diabetes because they believe the disease kills slowly and cannot be treated.
ce qu'on veut, c'est que chacun se sente concerné, que si vous, on vous fait une glycémie.
She says the Association of Diabetic Patients she heads wants the government to immediately provide free treatment to everyone whose sugar level is very high. She says the government and donor agencies should show more commitment to the well-being of patients by making treatment available in all hospitals and supplying all patients with blood glucose meters so they will always be able to measure their blood sugar levels. Esunge said since Cameroon reported the first cases of the coronavirus in March, many diabetic patients have avoided going to the hospital for fear of contamination. She said a majority of the more than 500 people who have died of COVID-19 in Cameroon are diabetic patients. Vincent de Paul Gentu, director of the General Hospital in Yaoundé, an official of Cameroon's health ministry, says people should guard against diabetes by watching their diets and through regular physical exercise.
Le diabète est devenu une maladie très fréquente dans nos populations.
He says Cameroonians should work harder towards preventing diabetes because the rapid spread of the disease has severe consequences for patients, their families, and their community. He says diabetes drains family resources and makes people poorer. He says he is urging patients to return to hospitals for routine checks. He says patients should make sure they always respect COVID-19 prevention measures, such as wearing face masks, regularly washing their hands and keeping 2 meters apart. Gentry said people should stop considering diabetes a death sentence because they can live with the disease if they control their diet and take regular treatment. The United Nations instituted World Diabetes Day in 2007 in recognition of the urgent need to improve human health, provide access to treatment and healthcare education. The UN says globally, 422 million adults were living with diabetes in 2014 compared to 108 million in 1980, and that diabetes prevalence has risen faster in low and middle income countries than in high income countries. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The governor of Sudan's Gadarif state is appealing for urgent humanitarian intervention to save the lives of more than 15,000 Ethiopian refugees who crossed the border into Sudan over the past 1 week. Suleiman Ali Mohammed says thousands of children and women have health conditions that need urgent attention. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Governor Ali says Gadarif state alone now hosts more than 15,000 Ethiopian refugees who fled ongoing violence in Ethiopia's Tigray region and crossed to Sudan on November 8th. He says the refugees are hosted in a temporary location at Umfashaga camp and says he hopes to transport them to the Umrakuba camp with the help of humanitarian agencies. He says out of the total number of the refugees, 9,000 are children, nearly 3,000 are women, and a little more than 1,000 are men. He says the response from humanitarian aid agencies is low compared to the needs of the refugees.
Popular effort has been carried out to mobilize local resources through the state government to assist the refugees. There was a big response, but the amount of crisis is huge, which needs a lot of external efforts and requires the international community to take its responsibility.
Governor Ali is appealing to the international community and humanitarian organizations to urgently intervene and provide life-saving support, including food, shelter, and medicine. He says, as the violence continues between the Ethiopian government and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, the area is more likely to see more refugees stream across the border.
The Sudanese government has done its part by opening its border and hosts the refugees and commits itself to provide them with safety and security. We have also allocated the camp, which was one of the conditions of the reprehensive of the humanitarian commission, but up to now we don't see any positive required to quell the situation.
Ali says Sudan cannot host all of the refugees without help from the international community.
It's an urgent matter and the impact on the state is huge, and we expect this impact to extend on our local citizens. Our economic situation is already dire, which doesn't tolerate this huge humanitarian pressure amidst shortages of basic commodities and services and much more, which we are mandated to provide to our citizens.
Ali says health authorities in the area have told him the conditions of the refugees might deteriorate rapidly if they don't receive medicines to treat diseases, including diarrhea. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song I Need Some Money by Chico. Been listening to Chico with the song I Need Some Money. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.